joined by the Lawmaster himself, Dave Rowntree, a.k.a. Slip Disc. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, I'm loving that name, Lawmaster, as well.
You are the Lawmaster. You are... Everybody has their own Lawmaster, I feel like.
Rather than travelling to the top of a mountain to speak to that Lawmaster, you just have to drop me in a DM, basically.
Exactly, yeah. Like, you're my guy I message when I don't understand something in Dark Souls, Bloodborne, and subsequently now Returnal, which is what we're here to talk about today. We were just talking about, before we started recording... Go on, mate, sorry.
That comes with... Essentially, first of all, lockdown definitely contributed to my knowledge of it. I tell you more about Dark Souls world than I can our own world at the minute.
And a lot of YouTube
rabbit holes gone down. But you know, there's talking to people like yourself all the time is what makes me love talking about lore. You know?
Oh yeah, what keeps me playing games. It's what all this stuff is just basically. People think about games, don't they, as like this internal experience. You're on your own, you're playing this game on your own. But I love that moment, especially like when me and you talk about stuff, is you finish the game and then I'm like, shit, need to message Dave about this thing that I've just found out. Like, that's the back and forth that I enjoy, especially from games like Returnal. And you were just speaking just before we started recording, saying, what were your expectations sort of going in then at the start for this? Because I'd said to you, I watched the initial state of play where they revealed it. I said it looked quite a lot like Housemarque's other games, but with a big budget in like a 3D space. There was a lot of the same bullet hell stuff, but I didn't know just how big this game was. But yeah, what were your impressions, mate?
Yeah, for me, again, like I hadn't, like I said to you just before we start recording, I hadn't played a roguelike game before. So I didn't really, that isn't what grabbed me. And, you know, and although Housemarque name grabs so many people, that didn't really grab me either. What grabbed me was when I saw it and thought, you know, it was in a launch that had loads of other games, you know?
Yeah.
But in the middle, there was this one game that was like, that just looked like, you know, it just, in my mind, I was thinking Aliens, I was thinking Mass Effect, I was thinking Sci-Fi.
There was those first-person sections of The House as well, which they were really intriguing to me. That was like a PT vibe in the trailer.
PT, like all of a sudden exactly. In there. And I was like, so that grabbed me. But to be honest with you, I kind of parked it and didn't really think about it after that for a while.
And then
they had I can't remember if it was a state of play or just a trailer where they were discussing it, and they were talking about the fact that, similar to Dark Souls, on death everything would respawn, but they were saying that would go one step further, and they were saying that the world would respawn, and not just respawn, but like essentially change every time. And I had this
how many worlds is, so say, in the first biome, let's just say, for example, you die, you go back into that. There's a set number, isn't there? It's like 7, it feels like to me. 6 or 7, maybe.
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, I would say that there's, although there's 7, like, I think the way to grasp it, I think, is that each room has about 7 ways it can be used, right?
Yes.
So when you go into a room, or because every room won't show up every time it respawns.
No.
But when you walk into a room, especially in Biome 1, when you do it over and over, when you walk into a room, by the time you've finished it, you almost know from looking at it, I can handle that room.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, with not only the environment changing, you've got every single pickup in the game is changing. So it doesn't matter how many times the room looks different, It might give you a bad room, but then give you a really good weapon that you like. Mm-hmm. It might give you the opposite. And a lot of this is, obviously, that is a thing from roguelikes anyway, but a lot of this is, it's your skill meets the look of what the world gives to you in the game. Like, I've showed you, I know we'll get into that later, but I had some insanely good runs that I didn't do as well on because I just didn't have the right gun, but I had all the health pickups. Like, it can balance itself out really well in that it's challenging, but it's random.
Yeah, and I, you know, there is definitely luck involved. And I had this, honestly, I've tried to explain the game and the mechanics of the game to so many people. I just can't do it. I can't do it justice. Like every time,
same.
I'm trying to, the balance between your skill and luck is there. But one thing I learned towards the end, and actually, you know, we'll discuss this when we talk about, you know, kind of when you finished it, what you're learning.
Yeah.
I think one thing I learned at the end of it was, the luck factor wasn't as big as I thought. And I think that it was definitely there, but I think what I took from it at the end, what I learned to help me play it better, was that actually a lot of the time, if I was in a bad place before, say, an end biome boss, yeah, it was more the fact that I hadn't taken the time.
This was a big turning point for me. Mm. Is your advice to me, where I was telling you, you were the same, but then you got past it before I did, and I was so stuck in biome 3, and what hindered me is that, like, you're the same as me, mate. We've just said we've both just played through every Souls game and beat those, so we're not bad at games by this point. Mm. I got through the first biome not really being that thorough with my searching of weapons and health pickups and everything, and I still beat the first boss. Yeah. The second biome, I then got through, like, by sprinting through the first one, not picking anything up, maybe a couple of things in the second, and beat the second boss. The third biome will then put you on your arse, in that sense.
Well, the thing, the third biome was that the change was that in the second biome, you could go from the first to the second quite quickly. The third biome was, if you wanted to go to the third from the first, you'd normally have a longer run anyway. But yep. what I thought the game was telling me there was do the first biome, then the third.
Yeah,
I think what I learned was, no, the game was telling me to do the first still, and then do the second, and then do the third.
So in the way that, like, we just spoke about the Souls games, they're difficult, but you can make them a lot easier for yourself. You can just level up to the point where you're just going to absolutely beast a boss. Yeah. And in this, you can do that, but it's fleeting. So you can level yourself up to the point where you will batter a boss, like... You can level yourself up so that your weapon does 5 times the damage that it does, and so that you've got triple the health, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, if you die, that is gone. That is all gone.
Well, that came to fruition when I played it again the other day, and after beating it, and I was telling you that I did a run that took me from start to finish, and the first 3 biomes, especially biome 3, that caused me so much trouble, because I'd approached it, because I had endgame Dave playing start game, yes, biomes.
And that's not your character being any better. That's you.
Yeah, exactly.
Dave being better at the game.
Well, it's that, but it's also the fact that, like, when I got to the end of the third biome, which had kept me for so long first time through, mm-hmm, this was all one run. I was massively OP. Like, I had tons of health. I had the right weapon. I had decent attachments and buffs. And then I just slaughtered the third boss. And I remember thinking, because the boss was never the difficult part of Biome 3. For me, it was the biome itself. And
it
I just
was
watched,
the bloody missile-launching kamikaze robots. It was the hardest enemy in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, I'd say that a pack of 5 of them are harder than any boss in the entire game.
Yeah. Because, like, if you've got one of those... you remember the names of the weapons better than me. The one that shoots out, like, horizontal... thing of, like, barrage of bullets, and then it fires out other things from the side and everything. What were those ones called?
So it was a kind of carbine, wasn't it?
But yeah, it was one of the carbines. Yeah,
it was one of the carbines.
But it was really fast shooting one. If you've got one of those, you can do really well against those things. If you've got a shotgun, you're going to die. Like, yeah, you can't get close enough, because these things as well, when you shoot them, they then fly towards you and explode. So you're pretty doomed if you shoot it up close.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally agree. I mean, for me, what weapons did you play with?
Assault the entire time.
So I did carbine, and then...
That's the ones, yeah, carbine. Sorry.
Carbine was that, which essentially is the game's assault rifle. And then and then once I got to biome 4, I was all about the pylon weapon. The pylon
launcher. I thought that was really fun to use, but I wasn't very good at... This is the one where you shoot, like, one into the wall, then you shoot another one and sort of create a trap.
Yeah, so... And, right. and I'll go into why. In fact, this is probably a good time to start talking about biomes, because if not, yes, I feel like we're going to talk everything about our experience.
We're just going to skip over it. Oh, yeah.
So, but I'll get into that, because, like, that, when I, it took me a while. And again, someone, I read on Reddit, someone put that this game is all about what weapon you've got and knowing how to use it.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I got to the fourth and fifth biome, I had one of those pylon launchers, and I just didn't understand the power of it, and I was playing like I had a carbine.
I just kept shooting it into things until I figured it out. Same.
Yeah, you know, you were trying to just shoot, reload, and then actually, but then it's so learning.
What was the actual technique then? Because I never really sussed it.
Well, the thing is that the thing about the pylon launcher that I liked was that once you'd shot it once, you could focus on another enemy, because essentially it normally staggered an enemy because it would do continuous damage. And it also, if you had a pylon that had like a decent longevity of how long it would stay there, you could essentially make a net of pylons so that one direction was
protected. Is the idea you shoot it into the enemy and then into the wall and the floor, or were you just making little squares for enemies to run into?
I was just shooting the enemy. And then, so I would shoot the enemy once, and then I'd shoot every other enemy around it. And essentially, it would create a net where all of them were tangled and all of them were doing damage. And when we go into the how it helps with bosses, because essentially with bosses, as you know, you've got loads of projectiles coming at you. The final boss was so, I did it first time, was I went in with this pylon launcher, and as soon as I learned that the whole point of the final boss was to hit its sore spots, I would just shoot the pylon once at all of its sore spots, and then that would do the work for you. And then I'd just dodge the pylons. I wouldn't even be looking at him. I'd just be dodging the projectiles, sorry. So, like, I could fire...
That's really helpful on that final boss, because the way that's designed is you need to look upwards towards it. I messaged you this at the time, didn't I? I was trying not to spoil stuff, but you have to look upwards towards it to shoot these weak spots that show up. It's the only boss that works like that as well, with these weak spots that keep popping up, basically. Mm. With this new ability that you get to shoot these like blue orbs, it shows more stuff. Yeah. And there's some dialogue with that as well that was very Bloodborne-esque. The dialogue at the end where she's basically talking about the fact that she can now see more because she's... All the gaining knowledge and insight stuff from Bloodborne is in this towards the end, isn't it? It goes really into that, but
yeah, that her journey inward almost.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I'm interested to hear all your theories on that. To be fair, because you are a good theory guy in that sense. So we'll get into that in a bit.
Well, I'll be honest, yeah. So let's. I thought if we go bio by biome, and then we can talk about story at the end, and then we can potentially talk about any other experiences I've had after since finishing it. But So biome one. Crash land on the planet, and you open it. You got a pistol, and
you go find your own dead body on the floor.
Yeah,
Celine's helmet, and you've got a pistol from her. And question straight away: what's happening here? She's already dead. Blah blah blah.
One thing that's worth noting at this point is the ship that you crash in is called Helios, and you survived it, but Helios didn't. That actually is a line that I guess when we get to story has more significance. But when I restarted it, that line gave me chills.
Yeah.
And we'll go into a bit more about that, I guess, later. But then, finding your own dead body and finding a pistol on it is a very, is a great start to a game.
Yeah. It's very intriguing. And again, for me personally, I didn't know that this was a roguelike. Or roguelite, or whatever people are defining it as. I didn't watch the second trailer. So when I went into it, then people started like talking about it and saying it's really hard and one run can take this long. I was like, it's sounding very much like a roguelike. And then going into it, the way this game ties it into the story more than any other roguelike has ever done, really. The crux of the story is the fact that you're coming back, eternally returning, as it were.
Well, I'm a huge fan when the game makes the mechanics part of the story.
Yes.
Like the fact that Miyazaki made a point of making sure that when you kept on dying and coming back to life, it was part of the life of your character. And like,
eroding away, yeah.
Yeah. Like
when a game references in-universe that you are dying and coming back, it's always really good. Because
something I didn't know about Returnal. So when I first played it and I didn't realize that you were going to... What I didn't realize was you were going to be finding like your own... Like you were going to be finding evidence of your previous runs.
I didn't know that either. No.
Like I thought it was so cool that essentially in Biome One you start out finding your own body with your sidearm, and then you also then are finding recordings. So you've got your own self telling you where they're at, and giving yourself exposition
from future versions of you that are now dead, which is enough to fry your brain.
Which get crazier and crazier as the game goes on, and they definitely get to a point where she's referencing that I don't want to become this person.
Yeah.
Whilst pushing her towards that.
And they get kind of tragic towards the end as well in that underwater biome at the end. Is that one of the biomes? Because everybody said there's five biomes, but there's five, and then you go underwater, don't you? So
I think there's six. Well, commonly what I see online is there's six biomes with five faces. Because they. Okay. But the thing is, and we'll get into this, is that the fifth biome is technically the second. It's just a different.
Yes, it's a reskin, isn't it? Yeah.
So, okay, so with the.
We found Celine. She's dead on the floor. We found the pistol. We're going on our first.
You're making your way through it. What? How do you rank the first biome in terms of, versus the other biomes of the game, you know, like how do you enjoy
how it? Much I liked it or how hard it was?
How much you liked it, because I think for me, the first biome, it's important because you're there a lot.
Yes. That one has to work, doesn't it? Because they know people are going to be banging their head against the wall in that first biome for a long time. Yeah. And obviously, like you said, you do return to it every single time. There is no other place you return to. Like, it doesn't lock off at a certain point. Like, that is always the place you come back to. And just talking about the biomes as a whole, the level design in the game to make it so that you go right back to the start every time, but you can also take a really short journey to get right to the end is incredible. Like, that is Miyazaki stuff, isn't it? Like, making the entire map of the game loop in on itself and fold in on itself so that you can always return to the point where you were.
Yeah, and one thing that I didn't do in the first, and one thing I did try and do in the first biome actually is I tried to find all artifacts, and I tried to find all recordings. I tried to find all of the, what they called the glyphs, so you could read.
Yes,
the language.
I went through all those. Yeah, they were really interesting.
So I did that I definitely did that for the first biome, and I made an effort to do it for the second, and then I read the but in the first biome I definitely tried to do that, and the reason it slowed down in the second for me is while I was in the first biome I read the worst advice, which was you should focus on the objective first and then explore once the objective is done. Essentially, this advice was focus on the boss and then explore after, which was for me the worst advice, because I followed it, and then I quickly learned about a week later that is not the way to play the game.
No. You were big in giving me advice on that. Your advice on Biome 3 is what got me through Biome 3, in the sense that I was going again through 1 and then skipping 2 and then go, you have to, skilled players, maybe not. I've spoke to people who've done this in like not many runs at all, and they're either really good or they got amazing luck with their runs. Probably both, but yeah, your advice to me of going all the way through 1, all the way through 2, being ready for 3 is what got me through that.
I actually feel a physical hatred towards those people that got that buff that for every kill they got health.
Oh, I had that once. I did have that once.
I had it once, but it was only after I'd completed the game. And I never got it through the game. And I remember thinking, as long as I had that. And one other thing is that I also...
Which one did you say then? The one that every kill you get health.
There's one where it's, I believe there's one where it's,
I got one for every bit of damage as well.
Yeah. So there's that. And there's also for every time you go up in an adrenaline point, you get it. One mechanic I also didn't understand was resource management and knowing which resources were useful. So the astronaut, for example, which essentially was an extra life. Yeah. I didn't realize that for quite a bit. And the astronaut actually leads us quite nicely into, I guess, the most interesting part of Biome 1, which is when you've done a fair bit of exploring at this point and you go into a new room, as they call it, and find your house.
Yeah.
So that was the first time for me where I was like, for me, that was the first time where I immediately was pulled out of what was happening in front of me. Yeah. And I don't know where you felt, but I, at that point, immediately knew of this planet wasn't a real place.
Yeah, it's something. How on earth could Celine? Because she directly says in a line of dialogue as soon as the house shows up, "How could this be here? This is my house."
Hmm.
Like, it's the house I grew up in, I think she might say, actually. Because then that stuff's all strange, isn't it? And then is it in Biome 1 when the cutscene starts when you're the kid?
No, I think that was at the. I think that happens when you've done Biome 3 and you go back.
Three, Right.
But
yeah.
I'm a bit, I'm not confident on this because I don't know which point, which bits unlock in the house. But the thing, because you had to go past the house to go into it.
And some runs, you don't go past the house. This is the thing I was saying as well. The story is unlocked for each person differently, where you might be on one run and get a cutscene that I might not get until I've done a couple more things, because I might not get that in the, obviously, like we said at the start, the levels are randomly generated. So some runs, you're just not going to go past the house.
So what happened for you the first time you went into the house? Do you remember?
God, I went in a lot because I didn't want to miss any story, and the story's still jumbled up for me. But I think it was just the room at the end of the corridor. She said this, like she's talking about having a bad energy, isn't she? On the bottom floor at the end of the corridor, she doesn't want to go, and it's just a dark sort of shape.
Yeah.
And then I went upstairs and saw the astronaut out the window. That was my first visit, I think.
Yeah, that was, sure. And I remember at that point, like, that was the first time where I was like in that house. And I don't know if it's just because of PT, but in that house, I felt uncomfortable. Like, up until that point, I was like, okay, I'm playing.
PT has forever made corridors scary for me.
Yeah, it 100% has. And like homely looking corridors.
Really innocent looking corridors. Yeah.
Pre-PT would have been welcoming. It's where you'd hang up your coat pre-PT. Yeah. Now it's where you turn around and just leave.
Yeah.
But that essentially, like, it was the first time I think where I felt uncomfortable to the point where I was like, okay, so whatever this is very inward, and it's about Celine. And then, you know, and it's not just some planet that was red, that was there without her, you know? Like, that was.
And then you start to get, I think in the first bit, you go, I think it was the first bit, you'll have to correct me on this, because it feels like it's been ages since I played it. It was only a couple of weeks ago. There's the first bit where you find the laptop, and she's got like an email from somebody saying that she didn't get into the astronaut program she wanted. Which is the first clue to think like, well, yeah, something's going on in her head here, because she's literally been turned down from this company that she's apparently working at.
Well, she definitely, well, for me at that point, I was like, okay, so she's definitely, at this point, I was like, she's not going to be a hero. You know,
the first thing
that hit me was at that point, I was like, okay, so she's not going to be the hero of the story. That's what hit me at that point.
Yeah.
And then.
It doesn't seem like a story that's going to have any heroes.
At that point, I was like, okay, this is bleak. One thing I did as I was playing it, because I'm all, you know, because I'm all about lore and stuff in these games. One thing I did do is when I beat Biome 1, so obviously we should probably talk about the boss. So the boss in Biome 1, Frike, that's how it's called, right? Frike?
Yes.
Yeah. So
I beat him first time. I don't know about you.
So he took me some time, and I would say that like he was, and in a way, I think that prepared me for the rest of the game, because he took me about 3-4 goes, and actually. At the start of this game, because I didn't quite understand the value of the mechanics, i.e. like the benefit of building adrenaline and the benefits of exploring.
This is why you did Biome 3 before I did, though, because you had a better baptism of fire than I did. I went through all cocky. I beat the first boss. I remember texting my friends being like, I've beat the first boss, like the first try. What's everyone talking about? This game's hard. And then subsequently got stuck on Biome 3 for about a week.
He kicked my ass to begin with, and so did Biome 1, because
had to learn how to play the game properly at that point, which is why you were better set than I was.
Absolutely. And I just, what you know, and shoot 'em ups aren't normally my thing at all. So I really had to kind of learn it. And
you are versed in the sword combat of the Souls games. To be fair, this is what this reminds me of as well, in Sekiro, I was blitzing through that. Until I got to I think it's the third boss, the butterfly lady, can't remember her name.
Yeah.
She battered me for days on end. Because I'd run through and done really well, I hadn't learned the game. And I think that's there, much like Biome 3 is in this, I think that's there to stop you in your tracks. Right, if you've done well so far, we're going to stop you here until you learn the mechanic. And the mechanic that you're learning in Sekiro is the blocking and parry mechanic. You can do the first lot of the game without that, but you cannot do that boss without that.
No, absolutely. You can't do any boss after that point without it either.
No, but the first ones, you can just run around and slash and do this stuff. The game learns you the dance at that point. And I feel like Returnal does the same with, it's either the second or third boss people struggled with a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And then the and then what I was doing at the end of each biome was I was reading up on names, because we haven't mentioned at this point, but obviously Selene is Greek American.
Yeah, right. I didn't know that. This is why you're here, Dave.
So, like, at that point, and the reason I was getting it was because of completely tenuous link. The only reason I picked up on stuff like this is because I've recently listened to Stephen Fry's Mythos audiobook.
Right. So you're right in line with this Greek mythology at the minute. Well,
I wouldn't say that. Like, because I listen to it as I normally listen to it when I'm driving and things like that. So, like, but some of it's stuck. And the Helios, Atropos, and all that kind of stuck with me. So what I was doing was I was Googling meanings of stuff. So Phryke, for example, means horror, right? So
okay.
It's like Greek for horror. So in my mind, that at that point, like the way that I would, and I guess the overarching story for that is like, this is her at the start of her journey confronting something horrible.
Yeah. It's almost like a different take on like the five stages of grief, being that there's five different biomes as well.
Exactly. And Atropos, just for some even more nerdy background lore here, Atropos meant something like irreversible. So when you're – this planet represented something irreversible.
Something that she'd done, which was irreversible, yeah.
Yeah. And then so essentially that was – so that to me immediately when I was looking at those, I was like, okay, so this is
– saying that lightly at the start, this is why you are the lore master. So now we've, for everybody who didn't know this, we've now got Selene arriving at the planet, which the meaning of the word for the planet is irreversible, and she's now confronting the horror of something that she did, which is now irreversible.
Exactly. And I will say, just before I set my standards too high here, right, there's a couple of words that I still don't quite get how they relate. I have my own theories, and I've listened to other people's theories, but like Boss 2, for example, which we'll go into. But so then once you beat Phryke, you go into Biome 2, which, by the way, visually is my favorite.
So Biome 2 was the Mars-looking place, wasn't it? The sort of rocks and amber of that place.
Fractured waste, right?
That's what
it's called. It was Mars. And interestingly, at this point, she's sent in the sci-fi kind of face value story, she's sent to a different part of the planet. And you go through
like a portal, basically, and it just shoots you out at a different part of the planet. Yeah,
and she's essentially on this red wasteland that's very reminiscent of Mars, and
fighting big like square blocked aliens with tentacles. The tentacle monsters get more and more tentacle as the game goes on.
This is the first time. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the first H.P. Lovecraft thing, but obviously all the tentacles really start coming out in Biome 2, and you're facing all these monsters that are getting...
I had no idea we were getting Lovecraft stuff at all, which is, again, what we spoke about with Bloodborne is the biggest inspiration for the latter half of that game. This game does work like a Lovecraft story in the sense that more and more information is presented to Selene. She gets more deep into this thing that's going on. She starts to go more and more insane from the recordings that you're reading. We'll get into those obviously in the later biomes, but I did take a couple of screenshots of some of the xenoglyphs that I uncovered, all that went, because basically you get different parts of the xenoglyph and you've only got a jumbled up bunch of words at first, and then you get all the words and they literally read like something from the Necronomicon.
There's two in particular that and one in Biome 3 before the boss, no, Biome 4 before the boss, sorry, and one in Biome 5 before the final boss, and Biome 6, sorry, before the final boss, and they have and them two in particular are really revealing. I'll see if I can get pulled the pictures up myself as well, so we can talk through. But in the second biome, enemies definitely get bigger. I think this is teaching this biome from a mechanics perspective, I think, is where they upped the difficulty and the journey to the boss. This is also the first time that you unlock a shortcut to the boss, right? So you go through a tower, you work your way up to the tower, And again, in the face value story at this point, you're talking about a civilization of aliens that lived on the planet and what was going on there. And she's trying to piece that together. Which
So there was a civilization of aliens. And then as we get into Biome 3, there's more sort of stuff revealed about what was going on. You might have to explain some of that to me as well, because there was a lot of stuff with the robots as well that I kind of didn't understand.
Well,
for context as well, I have looked into nothing to do with theories.
Yeah, and that side of it. So what was happening with the automatons and the unsevered is what she kept calling them. Mm-hmm. I still right now I'm not sure of the relevance of that. I don't know if that is just
I didn't want to watch any videos and stuff, because I sort of knew that you'd be up on all this, and I was saving myself. I can then ask you all the questions and you can tell me stuff.
Well, we'll try once we get to the end, because it very much, that stuff very much gets dropped at the end of three.
Yeah, we'll get into all that after we've done the biomes. Yeah, so biome. Like you said, it from a mechanical point of view, it's a lot more difficult. It's a lot bigger journey to the boss as well, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it becomes a lot more platformy. You know, in a sense, a lot of the side rooms with rewards, you know, involve a lot of jumping, dodging.
What I found with that as well is I think that part of the game is genius, that Celine controls so well. It's incredible. I messaged you a couple of times. There was only a couple of times where platforming ever killed me. And... yeah. I really, really, really think that is something they did on purpose, because the game is so harsh and unforgiving. They give you the biggest, floatiest jump and a dash on the end of that if you do mistime your jump. And I think without that, if this has the platforming of, say, I don't know, like one of the really hard, like Mario levels or something like that, you're trying to get the last star in Mario 64, this game would be infuriating if that was the case.
No, absolutely. I mean, even with controls like Dark Souls, this game would be infuriating. You can imagine that.
How many times did I tell you, like, in the first Dark Souls, I love that game. It is an absolute masterpiece. The thing that annoyed me the most is I was getting killed more by the environment than the enemies.
Yeah, well, the thing is, this is coming from a guy that's played all of the Assassin's Creed's. I appreciate it when a game's mechanics works, because there's nothing worse in a game than, and Assassin's Creed is a good example, when you're free running across rooftops and then climbing something, and your player just randomly jumps off in the wrong direction.
I've just recently jumped into Valhalla for a little bit. It wasn't for me in the end, but that drove me insane.
Yeah, it's funny they still haven't got that right, whereas like, you've got games
I bought Valhalla, I was like, right, what I do know about this game is you'll be able to just run through everything and it'll be so nice to like do like the parkour free running up the walls and all that. I don't know if it's worse now than it was when I played. I think I played Black Flag last, and I don't remember it being as frustrating in that, but...
yeah,
I know we're not here to talk about Assassin's Creed.
On the whole, I'm a fan of that series, but they still haven't got the mechanics right. So
you might have to tell me which one I should play out of those, because I didn't really enjoy Valhalla.
That's definitely a good discussion, because there's some good ones. But but for this game to come out and be so different for Housemarque, and for them to nail it off the bat,
also for different for Sony, because I said recently, I think I put it out on Twitter or something, that you think about like Ghost of Tsushima, The Last of Us 2, Spider-Man, like all this stuff. Me and you messaged back and forth like about this, didn't we? But they are very different games, like thematically, and they're very different games sort of mechanically on the surface. But if you really break them down, they are a lot of like open world, running around, collect things, and then go through the narrative games.
Yeah.
This is a complete different direction for Sony, which I'm like so happy they're still going to take. Hopefully they keep taking these risks as well.
Well, I think it's what's paid off last gen, so I think they definitely will. It definitely paid off last gen. I mean,
don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of those big narrative God of War, Last of Us, blah, 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 all those games. Like, don't get me wrong, but I do hope that we don't go to a future where every single game is just that kind of game, but with a different skin. I want things like Returnal to come out and just completely catch me off guard.
Well, it's interesting because before it was released and you got the reviewers talking about it, it was so positive. I remember seeing a tweet from someone saying F in the chat for all the reviewers playing Returnal, because damn, this game is hard. And there was
Get into this at the end. I want to get into the build both up. Our thoughts on the difficulty of this and sort of the industry's response to them and how they're a bit strange, but yeah.
Yeah, but then although I say that my first time through Biome 2, I found it a steep incline in difficulty. Actually, by the time I got to Biome 3, and by the time I was playing through Biome 3, I found Biome 2 to be the easiest. And I think that was because of the design of the area, and the enemies were quite easy to hide from and peek out, shoot and dodge. And I actually found it a bit of a safe haven. So if I did well enough in Biome 1, I was confident running through Biome 2 to get my health, etc. up and then go to Biome 3. I don't know if you found that.
Yeah, again, I wasn't doing it too much at the start because I was just randomly, I think luckily, doing quite well. But that definitely did start to happen after that. To be honest, I just Googled the boss, just remember I was on the right one. It's is it Ixion?
Yeah, Ixion.
Ixion. That one did take me about three or four goes, to be fair. That one was quite hard.
So me and you traded on Biome 1 and 2 because I beat Ixion first try.
You did that one first try. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's really interesting that is that it might be that me and you were like similarly skilled players. I just had a better run. I just had a better bit of luck with the loot that I picked up, basically. Or it's just different. Like we've traded about Dark Souls and Bloodborne bosses before. I told you Orphan of Kos was like, that's the hardest thing I've ever done in a game. And you were like, nah, I beat that really easy.
Yeah, and it was Ludwig for me. To the point where
I did Ludwig pretty easy. It's just
just two different types of fights. I mean, with Ixion, so
you've said before that you're really good in an aggressive boss fight where you're the aggressor sort of thing and you're not going to do too much defending.
Yeah,
just think Orphan of Kos to a T, you need to just go in, and I'm like basically just stood there like a little child while he just beats the shit out of me.
Yeah, I'm in my element with Ixion, and actually, Ixion gets a bit of flack because I've been reading up from Reddit that a lot of people saying that, you know, he's out of all the bosses, he's the you know, he comes in, him and Fright quite closely come in towards the bottom of the list. But when I fought Ixion, and I've fought him since, because I've gone back through the game, but when I fought Ixion, like when I put the controller down after beating him first time, I was shaking. Like, I was having...
That's the best feeling that these games give you, isn't it?
He was nuts. He's flying, and so just the people that haven't played it, he's flying in the air, and he's still got projectiles.
He's just the big swoop. What other boss in a game, like, I'm trying to... Is it like... Maybe even like Ocarina of Time or maybe something like that. There's a boss that does that swooping attack.
Yeah, he reminded me of the Valkyries in God of War.
Ah, that might be when he does the cry and swoops down in front of you. Like, yeah, it might have been God of War.
Yeah, I think my
same game where it's similar.
My favorite part of Ixion was every time you took his health bar down to bottom and it rebuilt and, you know, and it restarted and you took a health bar down. Every time that happened, he did this thing where he just stood still and fired loads of different types of projectiles. And my understanding, because both times I've played it, I've had different timings of this. My understanding is that continues until you've taken a certain amount of health of him.
Right, yeah.
And because both times I've done it, he's done it first time, he seemed to be doing it forever because I was like trying to balance dodging and shooting. But second time, I was ready for it. So I had my alternative fire ready and I was just blitzing him. And it felt like
that was a really big factor in that fight for me is which alt fire I had, because the ones that are like sort of grenade and projectile ones that dip, those ones I seem to struggle with because you've got such little time before he fires a load of projectiles back off at you again that the ones like say the laser, the straight laser, you could just already have your cursor on him and then bang, like hit him straight away. I really struggled whenever I had a projectile for him.
Yeah, and it, you know, especially since he's flying so much. So if he's not that part where he stood still, you can fire a projectile and miss him completely. But
even the bouncing ones, like completely miss him with.
So in terms of lore, he's a different one, and he's one that I'm not 100% sure. So Ixion essentially was someone who was punished by in Greek mythos. He was someone who was punished for betraying Zeus.
Mm. Have you got any thoughts on how that connects to the larger lore?
In my mind, it's maybe about the fact that the first thing was her starting out on this journey confronting the horror. The second part maybe represents her.
So you think none of these are sort of representing anything for themselves. They're all part of Selene then?
Yeah, I think so. My understanding is that each biome and each boss represents some part of her psyche dealing with what we'll get into.
That's interesting.
So the second part with Ixion, in my mind, is that she is, and again, I would say at this point, because I don't think there's been any official word from the devs on what they were doing with this. So
I hope they never give one.
Yeah, I hope not. I'd rather talk about it forever. But they have But they, Ixion, again, being known as someone that was punished, makes me think maybe it represents a part of her, you know, where maybe if we're talking about the first part being the horrible event that led to this,
she's
maybe
punishing herself now for
punishing
it.
Herself.
Yes.
It's very interesting in the context of the third boss. So third biome, after beating Ixion, third biome is probably the wall for a lot of players.
Yes, it was absolutely for me. So it's the introduction to what are they called, the robots again?
I just call them the suicide bots because that's essentially what they did.
What are they called? Like the race of robots, I mean. You mentioned it before.
The automatons.
Automatons, that's it.
The thing is, at this point, when you go into this, is that like the third biome for me was when it hadn't quite clicked that I was meant to be taking my time.
Mm-hmm. Same. I was still running at it head first and banging my head against the wall.
I was actively hoping that the gate to the third biome would be close to the start.
Yeah, same.
Which again,
and that's how the game sort of leads you to believe it's going to work. Is that, oh yeah, well, and like I said at the start, the levels do fold in on themselves to the point where you're like, yeah, I'll just skip the bit that I did because there's a really quick shortcut to it now. And again, I know I mentioned it before, but the turning point for me was you messaging me saying, look, you are not going to get past this unless you do biome 1 and 2. And as soon as I started doing that, I was having like good runs then at it.
Yeah. And, you know, and actually as soon as I switched my mentality to that, I made it to the boss 3 times in a row. And the third
did
one.
Did somebody else tell you to do that as well? I think you said, did you speak to somebody else who said that they were, is it on Reddit? Right.
On Reddit. So I was following the Returnal page on Reddit and essentially, it was when I posted that thing saying, I posted a meme. It was before that. I posted a meme on Reddit, which was actually the astronaut looking into the front door when you're in the house, saying, basically just posted a meme saying me reading posts from other people about completing the game when I'm still stuck in the web. Everyone piled onto that. In fact, I think it's my most liked thing on Reddit. I think I got like 700 likes and people piled onto it and were like, what are you doing? And asking me what I was doing. And then telling me.
The way Reddit does like no other, getting in and either helping or explaining every single part of what you're doing wrong.
Someone was just like, it was funny because
did you get goods?
80% of my replies was same. And then 20% of them were people saying, this is what you're doing wrong. Right. And that was like, okay. And then I tried doing it with that advice. And
this is why I don't need this. I don't need Reddit and I don't need all this. I was basically living that through you.
Basically. But I had to, but it still kicked my ass. And then that was when I said, I'm done. I think I'm going to have to quit. I haven't got the time to put into this game. And then we had, after about a day's break, I had a bit of time on my hands. I loaded it up and first run that morning, smashed it away for a
bit. You did it, yeah. I remember you messaging me. We were messaging each other in real time with this stuff. Like, we'll get into it with the final boss in a bit, but...
So to explain, I guess to explain to people that haven't played the game why this area sucks so much is, first of all, it's never close to the start. So if you die, you restart back at your ship and you're in Biome 1. To do this game, do it properly, you've really got to survive Biome 1 and 2 with a decent loadout and health.
Which is something that previously you might not have done many times.
Exactly.
Like, which is why it's so hard.
And then when you're in Biome 3, essentially there were enemies that could just, it felt like it could just, they could just one-shot you.
Oh, it was such bullshit. So there is, after you just get past the first, and the rest of these automatons are just chumps. They won't do anything to you.
Yeah.
But then there is this bunch of what the ones that crawl on the floor didn't even do too much to me. You know, the ones that explode
I was actively setting them off and then just dodging them.
Yeah, the ones that shoot the rings out. Yeah, they were fine as well.
Yeah.
But there is a bunch which basically fire missiles at you, which every other projectile in the game is like a giant blue, green, or red ball. And you can see it a mile away and they travel quite slow. These enemies fire missiles at you. I don't know about you, mate. I had no depth of field as to how close they were to me, ever. I never figured out how close they were.
And I honestly thought the speed at which they came at you differed every shot.
Yeah, same. Like, I would dodge sometimes way too early, and then they're homing missiles, so the missiles would just follow me around where I dodged and just hit me, and you're dead. If a barrage of them hit you, like, which is, I think they fire about 5 or 6 at once, if they all hit you, you are dead. You are just dead.
And I had this, and even if you're not dead, your run is over because your health is so low.
Your health is so low that you're going to have to take like a bunch of parasites to maybe get it back. And then you're fucked on that front because you've then got to, oh, maybe we've got a melee kill. Like it says you've got a melee kill, I know, 7 enemies to reverse the parasite that you've got, which has already halved your health. Mm. In this area, you can't melee anything because one of them's the things that crawl that explode, and the others are the ones that are flying in the air, so you can't get up to them. So you're just doomed.
But one thing that I took from this as well, because as bullshit as this area is, one thing I took from it is that, like, for me, and I think we had this discussion, for me, when I did get to that final boss at the end of Biome 3, I felt like that was the end of the game.
Yeah, it does build up like that. Like, it's so hard to get to it. And we'll get into this after, but I think this is the hardest point of the game. It's harder than any boss, like you alluded to at the start, with just these enemies. Oh, we didn't mention as well, with these enemies that fire the barrage of missiles, even if you dodge all their missiles and you kill this enemy, it then kamikazes towards you at an insane speed. And if you haven't got something to jump behind, the area of effect on it is so big that if it just hits the floor next to you and you've dodged, it'll still blow you up and that's a one-hit death.
So, Pete, I still right now don't know how to dodge them.
I don't.
And like to the point where it's blind luck.
Got to be already on the move as you're shooting it, then jump and dodge to be out of its radius. Like, I didn't stay still for a lot of time, but what you're trying to do is basically you're trying to stay still so that you can wait for it to fire the missiles, then start moving. But if you already shoot it in that time, again, it's barreled towards you and blew you up anyway, so it's already over.
But
we are not lying in this. We are both in agreement on this, and I think, like you said, you've read a lot more opinions on this than I have as well. It seems like this is the area that everybody got stuck on, is Biome 3. Not even the boss of Biome 3, just Biome 3.
Let's do our due diligence. One second. I'm going to open up the trophies for Returnal and see
how many people quit.
The three for
Biome. Oh, that's a good idea.
One second. While I'm loading that up, so the boss, what do you think of the boss three?
So the boss, I had a tough time with this one as well. You did this first time, didn't you?
No. I'll be honest, I knew the first time I faced him that I would find that boss relatively easy, but every time I got to him, I was so battered from Biome 3 that I went.
Yep, that's what you said to me. I remember this. This is the only boss, and I'll just admit it straight up. This is the only boss that I looked up any advice on how to beat, because I found that like I was getting to a point in it, and again, these runs take so long at times when you're at this point that I was getting to him. And I was dying for reasons that I didn't understand. It wasn't like I was doing a bad dodge. The bit at the end, basically, where all the platforms are falling, I didn't know what I was doing. So as soon as I looked up the thing, and it just said on this bit of advice, I just read this thing. I can't remember. It was on like Game Informer maybe or something. And it was like, oh, you're invincible while you're doing the grapple. I didn't know that. That's what was messing me up. So when they were doing, you know, his other two mates, not him himself, the enemy, the boss, his other two little pals who shoot the yellow beams, they were killing me every time. And I was like, well, how the fuck do you, I don't know how to dodge those. Again, this helped me a lot in the rest of the game as well. Imagine if I wouldn't have figured this out. This is what I'm saying about like having this baptism of fire that you need in these games. Anytime you are traveling while you're grappling, you are invincible.
Like, yeah, exactly. And the third boss is like a biome in itself because it's not like it's the rest of the bosses is one arena that you fight this boss in, whereas the third boss is
constantly changing environment like the rest of the game.
Every life is a different environment. And so his so Nemesis is the third boss, right? Just out of interest, I've just checked. So basically people that beat Nemesis or people that beat the Ixion was like 47%. So half the people playing it are getting towards getting past Ixion, but that drops to a quarter for Nemesis.
Yeah, and I bet that's not that they can't beat Nemesis, it's that they can't beat Biome 3.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was for me. And I remember going into the fight when I did it.
You said that, mate, you are a guy who is very good at games. You're the guy that people message when they can't do games on like Demon's Souls and Bloodborne. You're the help that people call in. And you message me saying, I might have to quit this game.
About Bloodborne this week, so apparently I'm that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that. And then you've showed me before when people have like said, can you come and help me with this Demon Souls boss and stuff. which yeah. that's baffling because I thought Demon's Souls was really easy. But
yeah, me too.
But yeah. Maybe I need to be someone's help as well.
I've never played a Souls game before. Maybe there's money in it.
yeah, basically. But when you messaged me that, I was like, oh shit, this must be pretty hard if you are thinking about quitting, even though you were telling me that it was really good.
Sure I wrote in all caps, fuck suicide bots at that point.
Yes, you did.
Like, nope. And we were like, I can't do it. And honestly, like, as soon as they appeared, I was like, I can't even right now. And then we had the, the boss, like I say, Nemesis. So to give a bit of, to give the lore to this, so obviously Nemesis should go without,
He's the boss from Resident Evil 3. We all know who he is.
He is. Yeah. he actually says stars on repeat as you're fighting.
That would be nice.
Yeah. So he. So that boss essentially feels like it is. That felt to me like confronting something. Like it felt like to me that was almost a climax of some sort. Right. So
the bit where she's like falling through the air and there's just shit everywhere on screen and like she's just floating towards it. Like you said, it is kind of a she's like accepting sort of going towards it, flying towards this thing, isn't she?
And going to war with something is like how it felt. And then we had and then obviously you got the cutscene afterwards, which to me is that cutscene. And Biome 4 is my favorite part of the game.
I said, what did I say to you? You messaged me saying, which is your favorite part of the game? I said straight away, because you messaged me as well. And I was, the way this worked is you got past Biome 3 before I did. And then I barreled right ahead because I wasn't at work or anything. I had a couple of days where I was just on it nonstop. And Beth was at work as well. So I was just on Returnal. Like I woke up at 6 a.m. and played it until I went to bed. So I went past you at that point, but you explained to me already, you said Biome 4 is a lot more forgiving and a lot more atmospheric than... So are we moving on to Biome 4 at this point? Are we done?
So to talk about the story and Nemesis, right? So since we've done that through the
I didn't want to skip past that, yeah.
Once you've beat Nemesis, essentially that you get the cutscene where essentially it turns out that she was saved. It turns out that the white broadcast, when she sticks her head in that thing, it looks as though she shoots down her own ship, which again kind of foreshadows what's happening.
Yeah, I didn't understand what was going on here. She says herself, I destroyed the ship.
So in that point, is that she's looking in that device. You see that it shoots something at her, at Helios, her ship.
Helios,
brings it down. So she's basically, okay, I brought down my own ship, but then she's rescued. So at that point, it's like, okay, so the
she
whole
goes
point,
home, doesn't she? And like lives out her life basically.
Then this was such a cool twist because she goes home after being rescued.
It's Captain America in Endgame stuff. She goes and lives her life, doesn't she?
Celebrated as a hero on the news, goes and lives her life. And then you see her actually being buried. Like she's dying of natural causes. So this is, in her mind, this is decades later. And she wakes up back on Atropos. I thought that was
and
so
she cool. It was just like, what the fuck? Like, all this she's gone through. And she says it, I can't remember the exact dialogue, but she's just like, here again? Like, I did this. I escaped. I went home. Like, and it's her, maybe you will confirm this for me, but maybe this is her sort of... after she's gone to this war and whatnot in the previous stuff, thematically, it's her then just realizing that no, there is no end to this cycle. So this will go on.
So Nemesis, and again, just a quick Google will tell you, Nemesis is the inescapable agent of someone or something's downfall, right? So that is like her going to battle, in my opinion, with herself, because the cutscene after that is very much like, it's like saying she could live out the rest of her life and she will not get over.
And it will still happen. This thing still happened.
She will not get over the trauma that's brought her to this place in the first place. Right. Yep. So that was my reading of that was very much like she's fighting herself. And then afterwards she's rescued. She goes home, lives her life.
She's almost kidding herself with the going home thing.
I think this is her like third stage of realizing that the horror that we spoke about and the punishment that she's putting herself through isn't going away.
No. And again,
there's a shift in the objectives after this. Cause at this point, the shift in the objectives is very much like up until this point, she's been kidding herself that she's got this sci-fi quest and these alien civilizations she needs to look into. after this, that
which ties into everything as well that we haven't touched upon yet, which is everything to do with what she enjoyed as a kid.
Yeah, and that kind of, and all that kind of, and at that, but at this point, the enemies obviously are still there, but all of her inner monologue, all of her recordings, at this point, are more about that there's something keeping her here. She needs to hunt.
Yeah,
and so it's like Nemesis is like her confronting herself, and the rest of the game is her going after what's causing this and confronting it. And volume four is one of my favorites, because not only do you get some of the best stuff in the house, because this is the part where you get to control the young girl in the house. And you control the young girl. And this is the part where if you go back into the young girl's room, the door slams in your face and the name Helios is on the door.
Yeah.
So essentially you're like, okay, so why is that? Why is Helios there? Because that's the name of my ship. So why is that on the door to this little girl's room?
Literally everything in the, like you said, the sci-fi world that she's dreaming up is in the house. Every single thing from there.
Yeah, so you see all of the influences in the house.
Did you look at all the books?
I didn't know. Is there anything interesting?
There's a book called Colour of Space, which obviously Colour Out of Space. She's only missing one letter there.
Yeah.
There's a comic. You might have seen that because you have to interact with that at a couple of points, but there's a comic that's got Cthulhu on it.
Yes. I did see that.
I think it's called like Space something. I can't remember.
I do remember now the Colour of Space, because I remember like kind of grinning to myself when I saw it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, those dogs get this.
But essentially, then
Space Madness, the comic's called.
And there's a real cool part where you're the young girl, which you later find out is Celine's daughter, sat at the dinner table with an astronaut.
Right. So is that confirmed then that is Celine's daughter? Because there's a lot of like sort of some people think that is Celine and that her mum just looks like her.
Well, I think there's two different trains of thought. I'm leaning towards that is her daughter.
So my train of thought on this is that both of those people are Celine.
Hmm.
Have you seen the film? What's it called? It's got Ethan Hawke in it. Can't remember the name of it. Anyway, that's a film with a similar time loop to this, where he basically goes through and ends up meeting past versions of himself that he thinks he's meeting his dad and stuff like that. So maybe you're going to unlock something in my head here that completely blows that theory out. But I had this sort of feeling where I was like, I think she might be the same person.
Well, the only reason, and when we speak about the boss of four, this will...
Yeah, which is... This bit of score here, I've had it on my phone every single day since I finished this game.
So after you've done the house part in Biome 4, right, you make your way towards the music, right?
And in the cutscene in the house, she's playing a certain tune, isn't she, on the piano?
Yeah, and she's playing a piano tune that sounds something like... like that, essentially. And she's...
It's the noise that gets made, like... What triggers that noise in the... world, because that noise is now stuck in my head too.
So essentially, it's as you're moving towards the fourth boss and his organ, and
in just any other biome, what causes that noise to go off? I think it's when you defeat every enemy inside a little arena. That noise happens.
It only happens in arenas where you're moving towards the objective.
Oh, interesting. That's very interesting.
So essentially, you're moving towards it. The music keeps you keep on hearing the same music, like it's drawing you towards it.
Like then, a big orchestral version of it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and from the house segment, you get the impression that is a piece of music that Celine knew.
The most amazing line where she says, "I don't know if I learnt this song from this monster or if this monster knows it from me."
Yeah, like, did I learn...
She says something like that, doesn't she?
Yeah, did I learn this from you or you me?
And that was much better.
And she... It's something like that. I think we've both butchered it. But I think it's something like that. But she...
the point.
The sound design is you climb up to the boss. So essentially
the music's ramping up, isn't it? Like, it's getting louder and louder and more orchestral. Yeah. And then when you see the reveal...
It's essentially Hyperion, who's a monster playing a giant organ, and he's playing this music.
He's a boss in it as well. He would fill the floors with that, wouldn't he?
Absolutely nailing it. Yeah, he's essentially. I mean, he's basically like He's like DJing to the
he's like monster Lovecraft Tiesto.
Lovecraftian masses, yeah. And you've got the and actually the glyph, so that the writing before him, I can't remember what it says, but the right essentially
I've got one saved here. Let me see if it's this one. This is the one that I saved because it just sounded exactly like it's from a Lovecraft book. But this one says, "Myriad eyes beholding the longing dark sunlight as it rains like pitch. We must leave for the waste where our visions have promised a new kind of transcendence. Glory, glory, glory." Which is,
which is definitely that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there is a, I'm trying to see if I can find it, but basically there's some writing before him. If you unlock it, which essentially explains that he would play this and I haven't seen him since that day. Right. So essentially the writing is hinting that whoever this person is playing this organ is someone that Celine has fallen out of touch with. Now Hyperion, and again, this is why all this is my favorite part, because I think this is the most profound moment of the whole game. But the Hyperion is Hyperion essentially means father.
Oh,
so this is why, because Thea, and Thea is like a motherly figure. Hyperion is a fatherly figure. Hence, why to me it makes sense that Celine is the middle generation in the story that has a daughter and has parents in the story, because that way then
thematically that makes more sense than what I said. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and essentially that's why I'm leaning towards it, although I could be missing a huge chunk too here. But they had this, he's playing this tune that she recognizes. There's the writing saying she hasn't seen him since that day. My take from this is that this is her essentially confronting the fact that maybe since
things weren't so great with her parents,
I think we have to talk about the ending here, which is that the cutscene you get at the end is you see Celine.
This is just the first ending, isn't it?
Part, yeah. So you see Celine. So the first ending, which is a couple of biomes away at this point, sees Celine get distracted while driving with what looks to be a daughter in the back, and she gets distracted by she's obviously sleepy. She sees an astronaut in the road, swerves off a bridge into the water.
Okay. So the astronaut showed up a bunch of times at this point. Is this a good time to bring up what that represents?
Well, do you have any theories?
I sort of saw that as her... She speaks about... I can't remember the specific line of dialogue. She speaks about something about it being a mum. And I took that as it was her mum and her disconnect from her mum. Well,
I think that it's that and a lot of things. I think it's her. I think it's the weight of her failure pre all this, right?
Because that astronaut outfit as well is not like Celine's at all.
Yeah,
that's something from a long time ago, isn't it? Yeah, and the way every time she tries to get close to it, obviously it reveals itself under the helmet that he's wearing. It's just a tentacle monster.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that she's fearing, obviously. It's the final thing you face in the game. There's another version of it, which is the thing that was in the lake. It's what her toy was that she lost. There's so much connection to this tentacle monster thing.
So, yeah. So my take is the astronaut is Celine projecting her guilt, failure, disappointment, everything she felt, even her parents felt.
It is a motherly figure, but it's to the child.
But it's
just in the house.
But it's more to Celine, because if you go back to I think it's more a figure to Celine, because if you go back to the scene where her, if we say that that girl in the house eating with the astronaut is her daughter, then she's remembering her daughter being sat there.
See, this is what confused me, that you're playing her daughter's memories. That's why I assumed it was her.
But put it this way. In that point, like, she's thinking back to what her daughter would have seen, and she's seeing her mother sat across the table, and her mother is just consumed by her failure of not becoming an astronaut and wanting to be her mother. So, like, for me, that scene plays out like how she probably is thinking, remembering it.
I like this theory more than mine.
Yeah, and that's to me, I'm like, that to me makes sense. And then you've got
I wasn't solid in my theory anyway, and I was very prepared that when we did this today that you would rock my world with another theory. And this has made me view the game in a completely different way now, because all the stuff that I said about the mother stuff, because there's a lot of sort of maternal maternal, returnal mother stuff in the game, but you've obviously presented it now in a different perspective, that she is the mother that's disappointed somebody. It's not her mum.
So I feel like, because if you then take
that, my initial theory was that her mum had gone away and been an astronaut. That's why she was so distant from this old looking astronaut figure, and that's why she wanted to be an astronaut.
Well, I think her mum was the astronaut that looked like that originally.
Okay.
She's now projecting herself as that. And I think that what that represents to her is her failure for not becoming an astronaut, and her failure as a mother
like her mum is, which is completely disconnected from her child.
Exactly. And then compounded with the horrific event, which is what we just said, which is that as she fell asleep at the wheel, and the last thing she sees as she slides off the bridge is this astronaut figure, which is like, once again, you've messed it. And
what do you think the connection is with that then? Now that you've blown my mind with all this stuff, what do you think the connection is to the fact that the astronauts in the game give you an extra life? Is that her wish to be an astronaut is her extra life that she kind of wants or something?
Potentially it could be that was what drove her. All that time and what failed her in the end. And obviously what comes of this crash is that crash kills her daughter, right? Helios. Yeah. And you can, at this point, I'm fairly certain her daughter's name is Helios because her name is on the door as it slams, which, going back to the start, when the first line she says is that she survived, Helios didn't.
Yeah.
That is why it gave me chills when I played it again. Cause I was like, oh, the ship. And the ship, by the way,
the ship is the car. The planet is a daughter.
I get more the case of the ship is a daughter.
All right.
Because it's like...
So because Helios crashed and didn't survive.
Yeah, I mean, the car crash is her car crash, but Helios represents her daughter, whose name is Helios. And she survived and she's going off into the world. Helios stays exactly where it is, broken. You know, and it's really hard. Yeah. But that to me, that's what it is. And actually...
Like you said, that's why... Now I understand what you mean about that. Because I didn't know what the context was for why that line of dialogue... And gave you goosebumps, but now you've got told me your theory, it makes perfect sense.
And her daughter's octopus is sometimes found in the ship.
I never found that.
Me neither.
That's cool.
That's something that I've just seen pictures of.
So the octopus thing, there's an octopus thing, Cthulhu looking thing, is the final boss in the game, but then there's also a different one, which is the thing that you find at the bottom of the lake. And the thing that you find at the very end of the game, which isn't a boss you fight. But then there's the other thing that's in the second cutscene, the second ending. What is this just her seeing different versions of whatever that sort of manifestation of guilt is? Or
Why
did she meet that octopus at the bottom of the lake?
So essentially, the octopus that... let's run through biome... Once you've beat biome 4, you run through biome 5 and 6. Now, biome 5 and 6, essentially, 5 is... biome 2, but set in a cold landscape, right? So it's like years later, it's colder, potentially due with the fact that maybe at the start when she got there, she was dealing with anger, and maybe towards the end, she's dealing with more sadness.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I took from that.
And then it's literally gone more cold to the situation.
Exactly. And then the final, and there's no boss in biome 5, it's essentially a long ass haul to get some keys.
Oh my God, those keys.
But then... as we said, we both struggled with 5, right? And then all of a sudden, we got all 3 keys.
just in one run. And then that was, we'll get into this. I need to tell the story that where I was live basically messaging you what was happening on my run, because that was heartbreaking.
While we're fresh on the topic of the story and my theory with this, then the final biome is underwater, right? And the whole point is you are diving down, down, down deeper. And the final boss of biome 6, the final boss of the game, is Ophion. And Ophion literally means earth, right? So it's also kind of like linked with serpents, which is kind of obviously what influenced the design of it a bit. But you've had and as you pointed out, Ophion at one point, Ophion also represents the astronaut, right?
Yeah.
But essentially,
Ophion, it's a skull for a head, and I didn't notice when I was playing, because obviously you're concentrating so much on the dodging every bullet and hitting every bullet, that when you shoot the skull back, it doesn't change shape. The skull just falls off the back, and it leaves kind of the like embossed like shape of where an astronaut helmet would go. You know where the dome would sit.
Yeah.
But you can kind of see it's like cuffed up at the front a little bit as well. Even when the skeleton's on, it's got like a bit of a cuff at the front, hasn't it? Covering like its chin.
Yeah.
As if you could just put the bowl for an astronaut helmet on there.
So my take with the final boss is literally just that that's representing the thing that in her mind took her daughter, right? Which is that her daughter sank in that water down to the earth. You see the clip at the end where, you know, after you beat the final boss, you find your car and you can't unlock it at that point. But essentially what, you know, what that says to me is in her mind, this earth that you're fighting is literally the earth that took her car with her daughter in it.
Yeah. It's the elements of earth that killed her daughter, isn't it? It's water that killed her daughter.
It's like her it's like her confronting the final thing. It's essentially her confronting the thing that led to this cycle in the first place, right? Which is her car sank to the earth. So at that point, that's, you know, and we've discussed what happens after that. That unlocks the cutscene where you see the crash. You know, you see the crash, you see what led to the crash, you see that it was led to her basically falling asleep at the wheel. And that kind of gives you the whole picture of, okay, so this is all in her mind, and maybe the whole story. Maybe the whole story is basically just in her mind, her dealing with the loss of her daughter and the guilt she feels and everything. And she was already in a bad place by the sounds of it. And then you've got...
Well, there's bits in this bit where we said she's descending further and further into this water place. You go down the entire time and you go really far down a bunch of times. And she's talking about... there's a couple of recordings in there where she's asking to be like accepted by... the elder god or whatever, like I'm assuming is this thing that's at the bottom. What's that in reference to, or is that just madness at that point?
The thing is that
you keep saying why, like a bunch of the rest of them have been accepted, but why not me? Why, what's wrong with me? Like she keeps asking that, doesn't she?
So, so my understanding of that is when you've, there's a lot of xenoglyphs that are mixed up where you've got things like that. And then you've got things that seem a little more down to earth. So you've got
what are the xenoglyphs like? Whose perspective are they written from? Like the one I just read about myriad eyes and being so like, what are they from?
For me, I think the xenoglyphs and the fact that some of them are so different is, for me, it's literally her battling with like the reality of what this is about and the story that she's telling in her head. Because some of the things, for example, the xenoglyph before Hyperion, right? I've just found it. So essentially, it's this endless song bleeding out into space, the inescapable ascent from the abyss of self and the planet where I found Hyperion, which is means father, waiting upon the spire, bound to an organ. I never spoke to him afterwards or heard his music again. And
that is definitely the connection that you made, confirmed.
Yeah, that could be that with his... So that is what we're talking about with regards to her dad. Now, there is a – I'm just trying to see if I can find the final piece, which is the piece before – I'm trying to see if I can find the piece.
While you do that, I got a message from somebody, a friend of mine, Scott Gibson, on Twitter, and he messaged saying, did you see this stuff about silphium and what that means in Greek?
No.
So silphium is – the stuff you use to heal in the game, by the way, for everybody else. Mm-hmm. Silphium is an unidentified plant that was used in classical antiquity as seasoning, perfume, aphrodisiac, and medicine. It was also used as a contraceptive by ancient Greeks and Romans. So he messaged me, Scott, and said, dude, I'm absolutely spiraling. I saw this on Reddit and had to share it. Obviously, Returnal is filled with references to Greek lore. Why would the stuff that heals Selene be used as a contraceptive for ancient Greeks, as if her only healing could come from never having a child?
Well, maybe for me, that maybe speaks to her accepting the loss of her child
as a contraceptive sort of thing. Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, there's a lot of stuff in here that I think is going to take years for people to figure out. But
yeah. And there's never going to be, hopefully, like we said, I don't want Housemark to ever confirm any of this. I hope people are coming up with new theories and new ways to look at this for years. In that sense, people have said that it's a lot like a David Lynch sort of thing, more than Lovecraft's the visual and like thing inspiration, but it's sort of David Lynch has never explained any of his stuff. And there's a lot of theories you can go into about every single one of his films, isn't there? And it's a lot like that.
So the final ending of the game essentially is if you return to the house after completing the game, you can go down to the basement and you see a wheelchair that then has someone called like an old haggard looking woman on the floor who calls herself Thea, which at this point, if you've read anything in the house, a lot of the writing in the house suggests that Thea was Celine's mum. Okay. And potentially what she's dealing with is the fact that, you know, that she potentially had a disconnect from her mother, even though her mother in her later life required a lot of caring, which would have been quite hard on Celine. And then the final bit then is the reveal that once the is you see the cutscene again when you so when you get the final ending, she opens the car, and you get the cutscene again where the car goes off the road and the car sinks.
What is the like white looking skeleton thing that she's confronting there? Is that the final boss?
Which,
in the final cutscene of the second ending, there's like a weird thing on top of the stone, isn't there, in the water?
Yeah, so I don't know. Honestly, like
that's just wild, isn't it? That
mind, it's quite out of place. And in my mind, I'm thinking, is that some almost grotesque imagery in her mind of what her daughter would
have been? I don't know about you. I much preferred the first ending.
Yeah, the thing that gets me with the second one is it muddies the water a bit because you've also then got the fact that you see her struggling to try and save her daughter, and then you see her get dragged out.
Yeah.
Now, so this is my theory. To answer your question, this is my theory on your what is that Cthulhu looking thing that's above her in the
Which
water.
Which one?
So I'm talking about
the one with the red eyes that you meet at the end of the normal ending.
Yeah. Now, what I'm thinking with that is that because she talks about the things bringing her down, right? So she talks about things bringing her down. So in your mind, you're thinking
she directly blames that thing. She says, "You're the thing that pulled me here. Yeah. Why did you pull me here?"
So to me, that is that what that thing actually is isn't what it is. Essentially, what probably happened is the lights represent a car with its brake lights on above them and someone saving her and not her daughter.
Oh, shit, like an iRobot situation.
Yeah, so in my mind, it's like
they save Will Smith and he goes crazy for it.
Didn't want to survive. If a daughter didn't survive, she wishes she didn't.
Yeah.
And so essentially, like, it's really cool.
So the question of why did you bring me here is more, why did you save me and not her?
When she says those things pulled me down to here, keep pulling me down to here, in your mind, you're thinking that it's something that took her down to something. Well, actually,
physically,
actually to her, being brought down was actually being lifted up and saved. So
yeah.
it's quite cool when you look at it like that. And also,
because it's not when she's saying it, in the moment, you're thinking, well, yeah, we went down, like physically to the bottom of the level at the end of the game, which I was kind of at the time just thinking, well, yeah, that's representing obviously her sinking in the car. That's why you're going down, blah, blah, blah. But that's a lot more. There's a lot more to it than that, isn't there? Like you just said, with her being brought up and saved was her sort of being pulled down thematically where she wanted a daughter to be saved and not her.
Her being brought down to this place of that's essentially her hell.
It's more emotional.
It's more emotional, yeah. Like they put her in that place by actually lifting her up and saving her life. It's a really cool thing because that's the way that they've got that kind of balance of like where the wordplay is essentially saying like to us without her experience to us being brought down would be the bad thing and to her actually going down would have been the right thing. Like she wished she wanted to
die with her daughter. Yeah.
And you know, she was already in a dark place anyway. And then you had the, which then again, you know, all just adds to this really tragic line when you start the game and she says, you know, I survived and Helios didn't. And it's
reveal the entire story.
That's the start of the
ending.
And that's the cycle. Like the cycle is she goes through that. She learns everything.
The cycle of the mechanical side of the game and the obviously narrative is the start of the game is the end spoiler.
They do a really good job of balancing Lovecraftian cosmic horror with a really inward story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the cosmic horror stuff for people who don't know who are listening is just his whole thing. Lovecraft was basically monsters that are often like you don't know if are real or within yourself or whatever that people are confronting, which are so just unimaginable that it drives people insane. And this is happening in a very, very unique way for that inspiration. Every inspiration that you usually find with that, even Bloodborne, as much as that's a masterpiece, is quite a direct adaptation of like the Lovecraft concept of more knowledge, more insight, you're going more crazy. This is more. And the thing that people say about Bloodborne not being a Lovecraft thing is the fact that you can fight the monsters. in this, there's a case for this being one of the best Lovecraft adaptations, and she's not actually fighting anything. This is all going on in her head.
She's not, and whilst at the same time
she's fighting herself.
Whilst at the same time she's confronting in her mind the most horrific thing imaginable. And to us, once you get all that information, it's nothing. It's her. It's something she needs to overcome. And the, you know, the third
vibe, like, as I don't mean this to sound like sort of I don't mean this to sound sort of without meaning, but people die in car crashes every day. People die. It's a really common death. And this world that Celine has made with the guilt of what's happened, of obviously her daughter dying in this car accident, is just, again, it's like, it's astronomical compared to what real life grief is. She's imagined it in a fantasy world, hasn't she, to deal with it. Mm. It's basically what she's done.
Yeah. And it's really well told. I particularly like, and actually it's not really,
who do you know who did this? Because, like, is this just the Housemarque guys that did like Matterfall and Nex Machina just pull this out their ass from nowhere? Like, who wrote this?
I'm so new to Housemarque that I don't know if it's a new team or whatever.
Right.
I
mean,
I'm thinking, did H.P. Lovecraft himself just join the team?
Yeah, did they just find a script somewhere lying around? Like, does feel like a Lovecraft script. It doesn't feel like one he'd write. It does really feel like one that was written inspired by him, though.
Yeah,
really, really
definitely,
does.
Definitely. And I think I imagine there's a very happy Miyazaki playing this game somewhere.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of the things that I think he'd, if he was to make a shooter, this is what it would be like.
It's like Dark Souls without the Berserk influence.
Yeah. Well, I've seen you post a lot about Berserk. I haven't done Berserk yet, so that's another one you need to sort of give me. You need to coach me through, because I do want to. I don't know where to start.
Yeah, Berserk is definitely something you should if you love this, if you like this.
I do, man. Like, you're the guy I go to for this stuff, because I know you like the same shit as me.
Yeah, you will love it. And it's Lovecraftian in a very Japanese way. And it's literally, there's so much stuff. I mean,
I've seen it pop up on, because I look at that kind of stuff a lot, like sort of what other stuff can you find? Films, games, books, whatever, influenced by Lovecraft. That pops up all the time. And it's very like, this dude with a sword, like fighting demon monsters. I'm like, how is it? But a lot of people say it is.
There's times you literally will turn a page over and be like, I've seen that exact thing on Dark Souls.
Oh, yeah. I've seen you post the side-by-sides before where it's like the exact sort of monster from Dark Souls.
Returnal. So I guess going back to Returnal, with regards to... can you see yourself playing through it again soon?
Not soon, but I will play through it again. I'm gonna save it. So as soon as I finished it, I've just done all the Souls games, every single one, ending with Sekiro, just like you did.
Mm-hmm.
Sekiro was hard as balls at times. Mm-hmm. This was really hard. And I was like, do you know what? I'm going to chill out and just play some like games that are a little easier. I'm playing through Monster Hunter Rise at the minute. So like it's not easy, but it's a bit easier than this. And then I'm trying to fight back playing Hades, which is obviously a good similar experience to Bounce 2 from this. Mm. Another like roguelike that everybody's obsessed with, and again it's got lots of like Greek lore in it, so
I'm trying to escape the Soulsborne cycle, but I've
Soulsborne roguelike.
I started playing Mass Effect Legendary Edition because I love those games, and then but then as you saw, I got a message from someone yesterday asking to help.
Crack. These hard games.
All of my night last night on Bloodborne.
These hard games, they are like crack, honestly. And this is a good a time as ever to segue into what do you think about everybody's response to the difficulty in this? Because I've got my take, and I feel like I might be kind of ignorant to a lot of stuff with this, but what do you think about, because people are saying it needs a difficulty setting, it's too hard, all the usual stuff that comes out every time we get a game that's difficult. What do you think?
I think nowadays too many people have feel like they have a claim to other people's work.
Yep.
And in my opinion, the devs crafted this with a specific experience.
I feel so bad for them when they're being pestered every day to make save points. I feel so bad for them.
I'm thinking like especially when you consider the theme of this game is she is trapped in this loop. If you save it and you don't have to do that loop,
you break the marriage between the mechanics and the narrative.
Because one thing that stuck out to me when I watched the speed run, I watched someone speed run in an hour and 12, and one thing that stuck out to me is she keeps talking about how she keeps dying and reawakening. And I'm like, it's actually kind of wall-breaking, realizing that's not happening.
You have to die for this game to make sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, they built it so you did die.
Somebody told me, I was in a shop the other day, and somebody told me, and I don't know if I believe them, but they did it on their second run. And I said, well, you might have missed out on a bunch of stuff, because there was a time where I went through one of the biomes and I didn't die. I think it was the second one I did first time. No, it was the first one. And yeah. I missed something in the house because I basically just went through and just did whatever. Like, I missed something that I was supposed to go find.
You really are rewarded for it. And they don't do it in a Dark Souls 2 way where they set up the game and tell you you're going to die and laugh at you over and over again. But like, no. They do it in a way where it makes sense for you to die. And yes, it's not rewarding to die in this game. It really isn't. No, it isn't. The game is the opposite to rewarding.
Well, it's rewarding to die in the sense that you may have got further than the last time and now you've learned something.
Yeah,
well, either lore or just a skill, like you said. The Dave who played this game the first time is not the same one who played it the second time.
Exactly, and you know, and as we've discussed, you know, you've got your story, which you probably want to say when it clicked for you
in the final boss.
Yeah, where you essentially where it clicked for you. So you spent what 2 hours doing a run?
I spent 2 hours doing the first biome, second biome, third biome, fourth biome, whatever. Went through everything to get to the water biome. I had, was it almost like a triple health bar?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that's the most health I've seen anyone have on the game.
So I had like a triple health bar. I had a robot, and I had a parasite which prevented my death. So I had basically two extra lives and the biggest health bar anybody's ever seen, triple the size of like the usual one you've got. I had a great gun. I went all the way through that final biome without dying, the underwater biome, got to the boss, got it within a smidge of its health while I still had two extra lives left. I didn't explain this bit to you because it was longer to explain on message. I had two lives left. I had nearly all the health bar left, and he hit me once, and I just flubbed it. I just like dropped the ball, and he just hit me again and again and again and again, and I couldn't get back to my feet to just hit him like a couple more times, which would have killed him. I was like, fuck, like I could have done the final boss first time. Yeah, and I just died. I died twice, and then I sat there. And you know, after he hit me, like after three times maybe he hit me, which took me to nearly like half health, I could have just put the controller down then. I knew I was going to die. I just knew I'd bottled it. Yeah, and the second time I went in, I had not even half of that health. I didn't have any of the... the other thing I had is a 5x power upgrade. But that doesn't really help you on that final boss because you're not chipping away at just a standard health bar. You've got to hit those targets. So having 5x power of your weapon didn't really do anything for me. But I just put the controller down, picked my phone up, and you were like, you're going to do this, mate. You're going to do this. I'd sent you the pictures, and I just put, died.
I couldn't even speak for you because you'd been playing it all day in that same room. And I had this and again, that's similar when I got to that boss. Again, I was saying this to Matt pre-recording, was that when I got to that boss, I was having a shit run, and my wife, who at that point had really gotten into watching me play it, like she was enjoying watching me play it, and she went to bed and I said, don't worry, I'm just going to play this until I die. Like, that was my words. And
I've said this exact thing to Beth. I'm just going to play till I die. This is at 10 o'clock. And then at half past 12, got to bed.
Yeah, and then my run took me right to the end, and I beat the final boss first time. And again, I would...
That's how I beat the final boss, mate. This is uncanny. I said to Beth, I'll come to bed once I die because I can't turn it off, and I didn't put it in rest mode because people tell me it blows up or whatever. So I said, I'll come to bed as soon as I finish, and I finished the entire game in that run.
It was like, I will put that pylon launcher, because essentially I was just shooting the orbs, covering it in pylons, and then I was just dodging.
I did it with the homing rocket things in the end.
Yeah, and that was
they just me, bossed
that
was it.
For me, that was just, that was the best. It just made it so.
You sound like you mastered that gun a lot better than I did, though.
Yeah, and the thing is, that it takes some mastering, but by God, it's good. Because
I didn't know whether to fire it at the areas around the enemies or at the enemies. That was my problem. And I never knew if I was doing it right.
You're firing it at them, and trust me, you'll see the benefit. Because the Dreadbound, I've heard a lot of people say the Dreadbound is their favorite gun. But
which one's that? Is that the one that shoots like a needle?
Well, a Dreadbound shoots, I think it's 3 or 6 bullets.
3, I remember that one, yeah.
But basically, it won't shoot again until those bullets return. So it'll have to hit something and come back. So if you're really close to an enemy, you can just tear them apart. Like, literally, if you go up to an enemy, you can just
because it keeps firing them straight back to you.
Yeah, so it never overheats. So
I never understood that weapon.
So the thing is that for me, it's not. I never used it because it requires getting close to an enemy. And
I just didn't even figure out that was the mechanic. So I just like, oh, this is really shit. If I see three bullets, I'm just going
to leave this. And if you miss your enemy, you're waiting for like 10 seconds to get your bullets back.
That feeling as well of like, you've got a level, say, 20 gun. In the area that you're in, you find like a 27 shotgun, but you know it's not for you. So you're like, skip it. I'll just keep this one. It's level 20, but this is the gun I like.
I genuinely would say I would need a 15 level difference, maybe even more, to swap
to justify it. This is what I'm saying, yeah. And then you go to the next area, and that the sort of vindication of you've left the shotgun, and then you find the level fucking 28 version of the gun you've already got, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna kill everything inside.
I read a genuine story again on Reddit. I read someone saying that the problem that he said essentially the people that are struggling with this game are people that are playing it wrong because
he's just picking up the next level weapon.
Well, yeah, but he was also saying that once he beat the game, he played it again, and he found it so much easier because he was just enjoying it and taking his time. And that's what made me think, okay, I'm going to start taking my time with it. And, you know, when I completed it, as I said to you the other day, I started again, and I did a run that took me from first biome all the way to the last boss without dying. And it took me about 2.5 to 3 hours. And
see, that's what people kept reporting online. Oh, each run takes 3 hours, but no, they don't. Like, a run can last 5 minutes to 3 hours. It depends what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I did this where I thought, you know what, I'm just going to take my time. I cleared biome one, I cleared biome two, and then I didn't.
You have to sort of get yourself in this zen, don't you? Where you sit there and go, right, let's not start pissing around and running straight to the boss. Let's go through every area here. Mm-hmm. Even if I die in this first biome, we're going through it all, even if I have to do it again. Like, I don't know about you. I said to you, you only had that one moment with biome three. I think what the game does really well is I never got fed up with it, ever. Mm-hmm. I always was like, right, I fucked up there, or I had a bad gun there, and that's my fault. Also, before we move on, I forget, my take on the thing with the difficulty is as well, I wouldn't go watch a really, really like dense film that I had to unpack and complain that it wasn't easy enough to understand. So I therefore would not go play a game that's really difficult to master and then complain that I couldn't master it. And the other thing with this is this game does only take about 35 to whatever hours, right? If you play like one of these big open world Ubisoft games and that takes like 70 just to consume the content from that game, because a lot of people are saying, oh, well, I'll never have the chance to get good enough at this to complete it. No, if you're going to spend 70 hours in Watch Dogs 2 or something, then you can go spend the time to get good at this. Like, I understand that games, I think for the most part, games should be fully accessible. You should be able to change the difficulty. You should be able to change things like all the controls should be able to change. Obviously, all that's obvious. But certain experiences like this and like films that are harder to take in as well, they're not supposed to be easy. This is a difficult experience through the narrative and mechanics being married in that sense. So,
If you want all games to be designed equal, then we won't get games like this.
We'll live in a very boring world. Exactly. And you know what I also find with like the people who don't like this stuff, and they don't like the Souls games, they don't like this stuff, they all say stuff like, oh, it's just difficulty the game and I'm not about that and all this, until they play them and realize that is not what they are. They're really fair. They're just harsh until you learn. And like Sekiro is one of the best examples of that, isn't it? Where that game will just kick your ass until you learn. It doesn't matter how much you upgrade everything, you will get your ass kicked.
I had 2 nights on Sekiro that was complete pain. And I remember
you telling me and saying, I don't think I'm up for this right now.
Yeah, I remember that. It kicked my ass for 2 nights, and then the combat just kind of clicked. And actually, a lot of people told me it was Genichiro when it clicked. And actually, for me, it was a little before that. And
it was the butterfly lady for me. Like, you, again, you can't get past her until you learn that it's basically a rhythm game with blocking.
Yeah, exactly. And I had this, well, it's learning that for some bosses, parrying is the quickest way to killing them.
Yes, to getting up their meter, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's learning which ones work.
We're going to have to do an entire episode on all the Souls games individually at some point, I swear, because we could do this for hours, couldn't we?
Well, I think that, I know we've been talking about doing Dark Souls. Dark Souls would need like 4 hours.
That's fine. We'll do two episodes like for that, and then we'll do Bloodborne, Sekiro. I'm happy to do it, mate.
Maybe do it. Maybe do main game, then DLC.
Yeah.
I think
so. All in all, Returnal for me is a masterpiece and a justification to buy a PS5 if you're into these kind of games in itself for me.
I would say that it's a good start. And as someone that, you know, is firmly in the Sony camp, you know, I'm definitely going to get an Xbox. I've had every Xbox.
Same.
I'm fully in the Sony camp in terms of, like, I like their direction.
I don't know about you, mate, but I'm in this. I get a lot of people saying stuff to me about, oh, PlayStation, Xbox. I said to a guy in the shop the other day, he said, like, oh, are you like a PlayStation guy, Xbox guy? I'll buy an Xbox as soon as they put a game out for it. That's as simple as that. I go where the games are.
I mean, I'll buy an Xbox before that because I'm jonesing for some Gears of War.
Particular jonesing to be doing.
That, and, you know, and I have a lot of Xbox games. I mean, Mass Effect, for example, I'm playing Mass Effect on PS5, but Mass Effect to me was
always an Xbox game.
I will go to that. But anyway, my point, I guess, is that for me, agree, it's a masterpiece, and I would say that it is. For me, a very positive start, because especially when you hear all the rumors that about all the different things they've got in development at the minute, if this is
12 new IPs or something, like, I hope some of them are like this. Not exactly like this, but just different. Yeah.
If this is how much freedom or risk they're willing to take, then for me,
we're living in a world where they can greenlight a God of War 2 and a Ratchet and Clank 2 and all this. And that stuff can pay for this stuff.
Yeah,
that's what you want.
Because, I mean, I think the thing that, right now I'm happy that, or the reason I say I'm Sony camp is because, you know, you look at things like Death Stranding.
We'll have to do one on that.
You look at things like, or even last gen when you look at Bloodborne.
I bet you've got some insane lore shit on Death Stranding that I've not even considered yet. And I already love that game.
So. Well, I'll tell you actually that Death Stranding, I didn't actually lore dive. I was thinking about about a week ago. I was thinking I want to play it again, but I also want to like watch a ton of stuff about it. And
this is what I mean. You know all the YouTubers, you know all the Reddit things. I knew you'd be the guy for this.
I'll be imminently diving into it because I loved it to a point where. I would say that Death Stranding is a game that had one of the biggest emotional impacts on me that I've played recently.
Same. I was so into every single bit of that game. Characters, the world. I was, no joke, mate, I've never thought about a game more in my entire life. I was dreaming about Death Stranding. I've never done that about a game. Like, I was dreaming delivering the packages, walking through the forest in the rain. Like, I've never done that about a game before.
So immersive, to a point where actually I was saying this to my wife just the other day, that I'm actually quite looking forward to playing it on a PS5 because you know, Hideo Kojima's,
apparently we're going to get like an updated version of it for the PS5. Like, I know it's already got the standard updates that just playing it on a PS5 does, but I think we're going to get a PS5 version or something.
I live in fear that one day they'll announce a 60 frames per second Bloodborne and my life will be gone. So
I think we're done on Returnal anyway, aren't we, mate? This has been great. This has been fantastic, mate. We're definitely going to have to get you back.
If you ever want to, you know, we've been talking about, I know we've been talking about Dark Souls for a while, but, you know, let's get our heads together and think about it. And, you know, let's,
Dark Souls, the reason that one hasn't happened yet as well is that is a lot bigger task to take on, like you said. And there's no better guy in the world to do it with than you, but that's a lot bigger task to take on.
Party video on YouTube. He's definitely...
I can't get him, so you are the next best thing.
Yeah, I'm that guy. If you can't get Vati, then maybe Slipdisk with his few hundred followers can jump on.
No, it's not about the followers, mate. You have the knowledge. That's what this is about. I'm sure everybody that listens to this is going to be absolutely enriched from their experience of Returnal. And I knew that's what you'd give. That's why I got you on.
What I'm hoping is loads of people say, "Hey, Dave, you're dumbass. This is actually what happens, and here's why." I would love. Like, essentially, I'm looking forward to seeing what responses you get in terms of different story elements.
We shouldn't get that. Our people are quite nice, so you shouldn't get that. But maybe you will. Maybe they'll come out of the blocks for this one. But maybe, yeah, this has been great. We will definitely plan some in the future. You've already said, obviously, you'd like to do some movie ones as well. Definitely get you on for that, mate. But yeah, this has been awesome.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
So where can they find you online, mate?
Slipdisc, which I'm guessing you'll put on the post when you announce.
Yes, that'll be all over the place.
It's an odd one to spell. But yeah, Slipdisc on Instagram is what I use mainly. So I'm on Twitter, but Instagram is my home. So that, and if anyone likes listen, like literally just talking about films and games and anything of that.
You post a ton of stuff about games, films, Berserk, Miyazaki, everything, don't you, mate?
Exactly. So if anyone wants to talk about that stuff, that is where they can find me. And I'm literally 24/7 open to talk about it.
Yes, I know this because that's how me and you got talking, isn't it? We just started messaging back and forth, all sorts of shit about games. What was it? Games, David Lynch, Bloodborne, Dark Souls. A lot of your main passions are mine too, which is a good thing we share. But yeah, thanks everybody for listening anyway.
Yeah, all of them were great to talk about. But no, thank you for the invite.
Yes, thanks everybody for listening. You can find me on everything else at Ant Shop First. You can find the podcast at MP Madness Pod on Twitter and Instagram. We've also got a Ko-fi link now as well if you want to donate anything there. And yeah, that's about it. So from me, it's goodbye. And from you?
Goodbye and thanks for listening.
See you later.
Bye.